Hello, this is For Art's Sake, a podcast that gives voice to museum people. Here we discover their untold stories for art's sake and for your sake. I'm James.
And I'm Alina. Today we have a special guest on the show, Dr. Jenny Newell from the Australian Museum in Sydney. Jenny focuses on educating people about the climate crisis through exhibitions and community programs. Jenny has a really remarkable career as a curator, as she worked at top museums such as the British Museum and the American Museum of Natural History. She's a true expert on the cultural dimensions of climate change and has a wealth of knowledge to share. And as the topic remains in the public eye and museums aim to address issues around climate change, we're really excited to talk to her today. Jenny, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be with you.
Jenny, we've just given you sort of a very brief introduction, but I'm sure you can do that a little bit better. Could you tell us in your own words what it is that you do?
Sure. It was a great introduction, actually. So I'm the curator for climate change at the Climate Solutions Centre at the Australian Museum in Sydney. And as Alina said, I'm working on really trying to get people engaged in climate change, trying to help them understand the climate crisis and the crisis in biodiversity. And just using museum modes to really reach people, connect to them where they're at and help them really understand what's going on in our world and what they can do about it, really opening up pathways to action. And so I use exhibitions and events and our website and all sorts of, you know, other ways of connecting to people through our museum.
And can you just tell us a little bit about your journey? How did you get to the current role? Because curator for climate change sounds pretty interesting, and there must have been an interesting path to get there.
Yes, indeed. And it is a really fortunate role. Certainly not many curators for climate change or curators for the Anthropocene around. There are more of us in museums around the world, but certainly we're few and far between. But it's certainly something I'm hoping there'll be more of us working in this space as the years go by. So I came to this role through a really beautifully circuitous route, but I've been working on people and nature really is the key theme throughout my life. And I guess as a kid, I spent a lot of time out in the forests and spending lots of time with animals and really enjoying lots of time in nature. And I really also fell in love with history when I was at school and had a wonderful history teacher who really got me, you know, really connected into the excitement of unravelling the past, you know, and figuring out what used to go on and doing detective work. And yeah, so I guess I was then at university, at the Australian National University, studying history. And I also decided that doing a PhD would be a really fun thing to do. And so it was. And I worked in environmental history. And because I'd been, just before starting my PhD, I'd been working for a while with Professor Nicholas Thomas on a project to do with art and history of the Pacific, I was really wanting to delve much more into the Pacific, and it seemed like an area, because it's like Australia's neighbourhood, but we, growing up in Australia, tend to hear very little about the Pacific. And so I really wanted to find out more, and I thought there must be a lot of incredible things going on in the Pacific. And so there are. It's so true that there's always more and more to discover about the Pacific. And so I spent a long time really trying to understand the different relationships between people and nature in the Pacific and what we in Western cultures could really learn to our advantage and to the world's advantage, really, about how to relate better to our natural world and how to recognise ourselves as being part of the natural world and being more responsible for it. So it's through my research into 18th century relationships between Europeans and islanders in the Pacific that I came to find a job at the British Museum as an assistant curator in the Pacific Collection. And from there, working with Pacific Islander communities in London, I learnt more about climate change because there were people there from Kiribati and Tuvalu and other places who were really being impacted by climate change. So then over the past, I suppose it's been since 2001, I've been hearing more about climate change from my Pacific Islander colleagues and really wanting to use museums as a platform for helping to raise the awareness about what's going on in climate change through using, you know, the kinds of ways of reaching the broader public that museums enable and helping to really get those specific voices heard. And, from there to a full-time job working on the climate emergency, which is something which I really wanted to do. So increasingly important role for as many of us to take on as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think it sounds like really important work that you're doing. And I think it's really nice to hear those the more interesting, more unique job titles where we do have people specifically working on something like climate change, as opposed to it being just a small part of someone else's sort of much wider role. Before we get into your work more specifically, perhaps you can tell us just a little bit about the Australian Museum. I think we might have some listeners who aren't super familiar with the museum and its collections. So maybe you could give a brief introduction to what the Australian Museum is all about.
So the Australian Museum is the first museum in Australia, and it's on the land of the Gadigal people. We're very, very grateful and fortunate beneficiaries of the great stewardship of this land by the Gadigal for time out of mind, tens of thousands of years. So the Australian Museum has been on this land since, it's been nearly 200 years. So it's our 200-year anniversary on 2027. So it's certainly a venerable institution, but doing really cutting-edge work, really enabling voices of First Nations people from across Australia and the Pacific to be heard. Lots of wonderful research being done by a team of scientists who work on many different areas, but particularly life sciences and geological sciences. And we have, you know, our wonderful archives and other curatorial areas. So the Australian Museum really focuses on helping people understand many different dimensions of Australian nature and culture, and also out to the Pacific. We have one of the largest Pacific collections in the world. I do recommend you jump on the Australian Museum's website. It's just australian.museum. And a lot of great content there if you want to explore, well, pretty much anything about Australia. You can come and find out a lot about Australia there and about the Pacific. At the Australian Museum, we've got a really vibrant education program. We have a lot of students who come through to the site, and then also a lot of outreach to schools around Australia. And that's often through video conferences and meet the expert sessions with Q&As with museum curators and scientists. So lots of really diverse programs. We've got a very large members program as well. You know, lots of a very large membership and very active public programs.
Thank you so much, Jenny. It's great to get this overview. I suppose that 2027 is going to be a big date for you to celebrate, right?
Yes.
So we'd love to hear more about the Climate Solutions Centre you work at, and it sounds really fascinating. So we'd love to hear how did that come about?
Yes, thanks. The Climate Solutions Centre is focusing the work that we do at the Australian Museum around engaging people in climate change. And so it's something that we wanted to do to highlight how important it is to really be focusing on the solutions to climate change. And it's got that really positive feel about it. It's also, because it's a centre, it's really, we're wanting to pull people together, help to pull experts in climate solutions together to share their perspectives on what it is that the general public can do to help advance climate solutions, and whether it's technological solutions, nature-based or community-based solutions. There's just so much that has actually been developed that we all just need to get behind. The problem is there's a gap in the media between all the solutions that exist and just the general sort of reportage, general acknowledgement of the solutions that exist. It might be a particularly Australian problem, I'm not sure, but it does seem to be an issue that there's not a lot of knowledge about the kinds of solutions that we can all get behind and help to really advance. So what we're wanting to do through our Climate Solutions Centre is pull together people and stories and innovations and really communicate that out in as many ways as possible through as many different channels as possible. So that's through exhibitions, yes. So that's, you know, on-site exhibitions and touring exhibitions, but also online and through social media and through, you know, lots of different public programs that can go out to towns and go out to regional Australia and not just be people in museums talking to the kinds of people who ordinarily come to museums. So it's really wanting to make sure we're getting out beyond our walls. So it is a centre in the sense of being a centre for ideas and a centre for stories to be coalescing and then being shared out. So it's not a physical, you know, place where people can come and visit it. It's more like an academic centre in that regard, in terms of it being just something that's, you know, it's formed by people working together. And we are hoping that by setting ourselves up as this centre, we will be attracting more funding, which is important because, you know, like any museum, we do need external funding from donors and philanthropists and corporations to enable the work that we want to do. So that's I know that's fairly typical for pretty much any museum to need that extra support.
So part of your work, obviously, is bringing the public's attention to new issues in climate change, to new discussions, to new debates. And working in museums myself, I know that the process for coming up with new projects can sometimes be quite long, and you're working on a subject that's quite urgent. So what's the process like for coming up with new climate change projects or new ways of addressing climate change for the museum?
So that's so true. There's such a tension between wanting to act quickly on this emergency and get everyone everywhere involved in making sure we're actually taking action as fast as possible in this very rapidly disappearing window that we have. And then the slowness of museum processes. And of course, we have to develop our exhibitions and our outreach carefully and in collaboration with many other busy teams. And so I just have to make sure that whatever I'm developing is, you know, does keep moving, but to try not to get too frustrated by the fact that we can't just turn it around in 6 months. It's really going to be something that you know, takes a museum length of time. And so one thing I've been able to do is develop a fairly small exhibition, which is a touring exhibition, and that was quite a reasonably quick process to put together around ways of regenerating nature and living sustainably, an exhibition called Future Now. It does use dioramas, which is fabulous. Everyone loves dioramas, and our model makers are quite good. The ones we went to and hired for that project are used to making quite quick turnaround architectural models, and so they had lots of fun with this project, but were still able to create quite a lot to our specs in just a few quick months. So it was like 4 months to develop these models. And another thing I was able to do is a temporary exhibition for the museum. I was able to curate and project manage and do all the research and connecting to about 50 different experts here in Australia. It was an exhibition about like the top 10 climate innovations in Australia. So these top 10 ways of tackling climate change. That was an exhibition called Spark, and it was just in our hall for a short time because it was closed down because of COVID, but it is now available online as a virtual tour. So you can walk around it and see the content there. So that was something that I was kind of surprised actually at how quickly we were able to mount that exhibition, partly because we were doing it in a very sustainable way. We were using existing walls, these sort of like temporary exhibition walls, so that we're using, because we were using existing exhibition furniture, we didn't have to go out and get those things made. We just put a skin over the top of them with the new content. And we were lent lots of objects from the different labs and engineers who had developed these new bits of technology, and videos from people working with communities. And so we were able to bring in a lot of these wonderful innovations quite quickly in a very short time. 3 months, I wouldn't actually recommend to anyone to try and create an exhibition from scratch, but I've sort of proved that it's possible. It's a lot of the things that I'm doing now are much more likely to be digital projects because we can get them out really quickly compared to the sort of longer term exhibition development that we realistically understand will always take a long time.
Well, I can only imagine, you know, the challenges you are facing to make a rapid response actually rapid. Thankfully, technologies, you know, they can be helpful here. Yes. But 3 months, that's really impressive. And we'll make sure that we'll include the link to the top 10 ways of tackling climate change exhibition on the website so people could go and see it. But we'd like to address something that we believe is a rather big issue. And while we're talking about climate change, we have to mention greenwashing. And do you think that the prevalence of greenwashing in the sector by institutions who are often taking huge amounts of money from fossil fuel corporations has an impact on how the public perceives museums' approaches to climate change?
Yes, definitely. I think it really undermines any authority a museum has in that space. I think museums taking money from fossil fuel companies means that the museum no longer really has sort of an authentic or a reasonable grounds to stand on to be telling the public what they should be doing around reducing emissions and tackling the climate crisis if they're just continuing to contribute to the climate crisis themselves. And I think it's already underway, but I do hope that more museums will be making that decision to not accept fossil fuel funding, thanks largely to public agitation around the issue. And it's been really great seeing how many people willing to take a stand and, you know, really raise their voices about that issue, and seeing that a lot of institutions are listening and realising that it's, I think, probably the time has passed where we can comfortably just accept money from a fossil fuel company and expect that that will just be accepted. So, yeah, I think going forward, I'm expecting that more and more institutions will be looking for other funders. There are many other funders who are doing really wonderful ethical work in the world who are usually delighted to support cultural institutions. I don't feel there's any need anymore to just rely on that kind of difficult, problematic and conflicting messaging that, you know, the museum has to enter into if it's taking money from a fossil fuel company.
So, Jenny, it sounds like you're, you know, sort of hopeful for the future with museums with regard to climate change, and that's really good to hear. Honestly, I think we do get a lot of negative stuff about museums that are doing bad work. And we know that a large part of your work is focused on audiences' thoughts and feelings about climate change, those museum visitors and how they're concerned about the future of the planet. So first off, how does the Australian Museum go about finding out what its visitors think about climate change?
Yeah, so we do surveys, and we've been working with a social research group, and they help us to either design our own or to design for us different surveys that go out to different components of our audience, whether it's the general public or it's the members of the museum or it's people who are exiting the museum and there's, you know, an exit survey. So we've got lots of different scales that we're doing surveys on. I also run small little surveys for people when I'm doing a small program. And yes, it's through that we're really deepening our knowledge of how people are thinking about climate change and how they're expecting their cultural institutions to be interacting with the issues of the climate and biodiversity crises. We're also tapping into large-scale work that's being done by researchers into the Australian population and their attitudes to a wide range of issues. And there's annual surveys done by the Australia Institute called Climate of the Nation, and that's a longitudinal study because it happens every year and it's been happening for quite a while now, and so we're able to see how attitudes are changing. And they're often asking about specific areas as well as asking a standard set of questions about understandings and connections to climate change. And so we are able to get a lot of really useful data from that. And one of the things I'm really appreciating about the surveys that we're running ourselves is that I'm always putting in a question, which is, if you could ask a question of an expert in climate or in culture, what would you ask? And the answers we get to that are completely fascinating. It's just wonderful to see what people are asking. And it's really been very much that that has helped me to design the programs and outreach that, that I've been designing. So it's knowing that people still want information, basic information about climate change. They still want to know what it is they can do. They still want to know, you know, quite a few like really burning questions, like, is it too late? And are animals going to be able to adapt? And is there really anything I can do? I mean, yeah, it's just, it's kind of heartbreaking actually hearing the kinds of questions people have. Museums have a real responsibility to step up and help their communities to really grasp what's going on and empower them to take action, because we have a role that's, as everyone knows, you know, museums are trusted as sources of information, and we really need to make sure we're fulfilling that trust and helping people to navigate all the challenges that climate change is bringing. There's so much that people are looking for in terms of reassurance and hope. They need to know that that kind of determined hope that we want them to find is exactly what we need. We all need to be able to hang on to that determination to really make a difference in the world, and determination to reduce the emissions, regenerate nature, look after each other, and create the future that we want to see. So not just to give up to despair, but actually really, you know, understand that we're all in this together and that there's lots of ways we can work together to create the future we need.
So in terms of the sort of evidence that the Australian Museum gathers through its surveys, through its audience research, how does that evidence then impact on the projects? Have there been any examples of projects that have radically changed direction to meet an audience's particular needs or to meet an audience's particular concerns?
So I guess we tend to do research at the beginning and then at the end. But, and so, you know, therefore, we haven't switched direction of any projects to date, except for the Future Now exhibition, which fortunately has two portions to it. So we did phase one of the Future Now touring exhibition, and that went out to shopping centres, and it's very much first phase with the three dioramas we created and with a set of videos that was set into the framework of the sort of these touring pods, three pods with dioramas and information and so on. So they went around to shopping centres, and we did fairly extensive audience research with the social research group, 55.5, and the information we received from that, which is very detailed, is now informing phase two of that exhibition. And phase two is where it's going out to rural areas, regional New South Wales. It will tend to go to like town halls and libraries, maybe schools, and they're sort of more non-commercial, much more rural areas. And what we're doing is making sure that we'll be able to reach the interests and concerns of those audiences. So that's part of why we're doing it as a phase two, because it's got slightly different additional content added to it about regenerative farming, going into that in more detail. But it's also just slightly reconfiguring some of the explanation and slightly reconfiguring some of the framing because of the feedback we got from the audience research.
Thank you, Jenny. And it's always good to hear about the good work others do in the field. And we believe there is quite a bit of this good work out there on climate change at the moment. Are there any projects you'd like to highlight as examples of good practice?
There are so many. I'm really happy to say there's so many. I used to feel a bit alone in this area, but now there's lots of wonderful colleagues doing really great things. I guess I'd like to highlight the Climate Museum in New York. Miranda Massey, who's the director there, does incredible work, and you only need to go and visit their website to see the incredible range of projects, and not just exhibitions, but also wonderful work with young people and creating advocates for climate in so many different ways and really involving communities, many different kinds. And she's just doing superb work there. Also, Camilla Tham and her colleagues at the Natural History Museum in London do superb work. And they have a whole new mission at the Natural History Museum to create advocates for the planet, which is a superb mission. I think just think that's so brilliant and very inspiring. They're really making sure that their programming and their exhibitions and their work out in the community and work, you know, going to the UN climate conferences and all sorts of really dynamic activities really help to foster people and planet thriving into the future. So they're very innovative and really worth checking out all their exciting programs there. Also here in Australia, in Sydney, the Powerhouse Museum is doing really good things with their 100 Climate Conversations program. And that has been really superb because they interview once a week, they have an interview with a leader in climate solutions of some sort, and they're interviewed by, you know, really top-notch journalists or other public figures, and in a beautiful little studio. And so you can go there and listen to the interview while it's being recorded, and then it gets edited up to be a podcast. And so you can listen to it as you're driving around or on the train. And it's also created as a video, and that goes in on a screen. They've got a wall of 100, they're just gradually filling it up. It'll eventually have 100 little screens on it. And importantly, the recordings and the video are all being archived. And so not only are they creating a very vibrant program that's running for 2 years, they're also creating an incredibly important archive for the future, really capturing where we're at in Australia with tackling the climate crisis.
Thank you so much. We'll make sure to include a link to that in our show notes because that sounds incredible. It sounds really good to make those climate change conversations more personable, more accessible to a general audience. That's great. There's one question that we ask everybody who comes on for Art's Sake. If you had unlimited funding, what kind of museum or cultural space would you like to build or create?
Oh, I love that question. That's so good. I'd create this fabulous, like, forest that people would come into, and it would just be a wonderful space that you could explore. There'd be lots of information. It'd be really sort of, you know, some sort of digital or, I don't know, VR or something. No, maybe not VR. Maybe it would just be like lots of wonderful ways of being able to come up to a tree and you'd see all you need to know about that tree and all its connections and the underground and above ground connections, and then all the First Nations stories about that and all the stories from different migrant groups who have stories about that particular tree. And then you'd be able to see how those beautiful parts of this landscape that you've just entered into are being affected by all the things that people have done to this world. And you'd be able to see the impacts of climate change occurring in this part of the museum and what you can do about it. So you can have a go and you can try out, perhaps you'd have some sort of way of planting trees and installing solar panels on a little model house or something like that, and then you could see the environment around you changing. And so it'd be really, really interactive and immersive, and there'd be lots of people there to talk to you. Perhaps there'd be some sort of holographic thing or just real people. Why not have real people in this museum? Why not? We've got a forest. We may as well people it with good people to help you learn and to take you on journeys and tell you all the stories you need to hear.
What a beautiful idea.
How about that? Let's just do that.
That sounds great. Let's get you some funding so we can have that.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Thanks, James. Thanks, Alina.
Yeah, beautiful idea. I can almost imagine myself walking inside this forest and I was smelling it. And Jenny, are there any final thoughts, or maybe is there like a key thing you want listeners to hang on to?
Yes. I'd like people to think about action for climate empowerment. This is something that all our nations have signed up to through the Paris Agreement. We're all needing to advance action for climate empowerment, which is making sure that we, all of us, are really well educated in climate change and that we know what's coming and we know what we can do about it. So just thinking about tapping into what you can learn yourself, but particularly, you know, getting in touch with your local museum, asking them what they've got on offer around climate change. That's going to help the local museum to maybe pull up their socks a bit. None of us are doing enough, I feel, except maybe those climate museums that are out there. But connect to other people. Just don't try and tackle climate change on your own. And a lot of us have very high levels of anxiety around climate change. You'd be surprised how many people next to you are just as anxious, but who also have a lot of really good ideas. And so, you know, don't sit alone fretting. Just get in there, meet other people, join a collective of some sort. You know, find, there's so many groups out there. There'll be something there that really chimes with you. So find out, you know, think about what gives you joy and what your superpower is and what you feel needs to be done in the world. And in the centre where those three things meet, what brings you joy and what needs to be done and what your superpower is, bring them together. And so that's the sweet spot. That's the place where you can jump in and take action. But make sure you're connecting up with other people to do it, because that's how we really upscale our power and we can create the world we want. We can do it.
We absolutely can. Yeah.
We can. And museums can help us to do that. Primed to do it. We've got what it takes. I think museums are such a great powerhouse for really advancing climate action and helping people to feel empowered to take action. So that's what we need to do.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jenny. Something for all of us to think about.
That's really lovely. Thanks, Jenny.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of For Art's Sake. If you'd like to learn more about who we are and what we do, find us online at forartsake.co.uk, on Twitter at @sake_arts, or on Instagram at forartsake.uk.